is CBS Eye on the World with John Batchelor. Here's John Batchelor.
I welcome Malcolm Hoenlein, Conference of Presidents, Major American Jewish Organizations. The breaking news is that Libya, a broken state, has fired its foreign minister. Why? Meeting an Israeli foreign minister. Malcolm, a very good evening to you. I had not been following Libya's latest tribulations. It's a divided country. It's overrun with intrigue. What explains this sudden decision to become what you'd have to say is an enemy of freedom? Good evening to you.
Good evening, John. And this is a very important story because it could have broader implications. But there was a statement issued by the foreign minister of Israel saying that he had met with the foreign minister of Libya on the sidelines of a meeting in Italy that they were attending. The Libyan foreign minister is Najla Mangouche. And this resulted in her in a storm of reaction in Libya initially, but the Arab news media all over the region, some of them, interestingly, played it down, like Alain Media in the Gulf, who reported that the Libyan diplomat was overthrown, whereas Turkish media and others, some didn't report it, some treated it very lightly. Now, the government she represented is headed by Dbeiba. He's actually out of office. His term expired. She has been a very forthright foreign minister. She has traveled to places that others hadn't gone to. She was the prime minister is known to be close to Turkey. And she also worked with them in the past. She condemned the invasion by Russia of Ukraine and outreach to Algeria and other countries. And she talked about Libya's stability, talking about the presence of foreign forces. And she was suspended earlier in 21 by the Presidential Council for mismanagement of foreign affairs. And the president rejected this. And then she got people angry because of she critiqued Greece's foreign minister for landing in Tripoli and then going on to Benghazi without meeting with anyone. So she was somewhat controversial before. She's denying that there was any meaningful discussion. This was a chance meeting on the sidelines. The American government is saying, well, this was supposed to remain secret. They feel that it will hurt future negotiations by the fact that it was exposed. It will certainly, it's creating a storm, as I said, in Libya, where there are demonstrations taking place, tirings, flag burnings, all sorts of actions. And she has fled to Turkey. I understand that the government gave her a plane and the security, and they took her to Turkey, where, I mean, she's concerned that her life is in danger for what she did. And there's an emergency session of the House of Representatives in Libya that's taking place as we speak. This is raising a strong level of controversy for what was really, I think, more of a chance encounter and an opportunity just to say hello rather than any kind of meaningful negotiations. But there will be clarification coming, and I'm sure that there will be many more denials of this casual meeting. But it's people are noting also Italy's role, which has done much more in outreach to the Gulf and Saudi Arabia of late, and that last year Dbeiba visited the leader of Tunisia when the prime minister of Italy was there as well. So there's a lot of intrigue, going to be a lot more about this coming up.
Malcolm, the BRICS have put South America in the news, inviting Argentina to join. That's Brazil, Russia, India, China, and South Africa. However, you point me in the direction of a story that I see for the first time. A new port is being constructed in Peru. This is a troubled country because of the removal of the president who remains in jail, the vice president ascending to the highest rank, and then disorder throughout the country. And now China is contracted to build a port? To what end? What's the point here?
So this is, as you rightly link it to, what happened with the BRICS, which got, I think, minimal coverage in the United States. It's not just Argentina and Egypt, Ethiopia, Iran, Saudi Arabia, UAE are being invited to the BRICS, which China and Russia see as a counterbalance to the West. You know, one of those who are trying to, one of the entities that they're trying to use to move away from the U.S. dollar, as well as build a counter economy in the countries of the South versus the countries of the North. But this story, I think, is really reflective of a concern we've long expressed, and I know you guess on, about China's Road and Belt continue to being expanded. They are building a port, which they call the gateway from South America to Asia. The we saw the land that's being prepared is roughly 1 square mile on Peru's Pacific coast, and it's part of this massive project in the city of Shaanxi, 60 kilometers from the from Lima. And they're saying that the it will cut many days off the travel time from South America to China to Asia. Generally, it's an over $1 billion project, and it will, as I said, reduce by at least 10 days from the 45 days that it normally takes. And this is a deep water port, so it can take container ships. They have been investing in ports in Greece, Spain, Africa, all over the world. I think there are 95 ports in the world operated in whole or part by Chinese capital, which is gives them tremendous strategic intelligence, other capacity. And they do it through the COSCO company, which is the largest and most globally competitive shipping company that that is owned by China. And this is raising concerns. I mean, U.S. officials, others have to see that this is a great threat. 60% of it is owned by COSCO. And I think Peru has a company that has 40%. If you would see the technological things that they had to do, they had to build a 1.8 kilometer tunnel through which the goods will be, containers will arrive and leave the port. So this is another one of the signs of Chinese aggression, expansionism. It has to be taken more seriously. We have to look at what they're doing in South America. And unfortunately, I believe that we're always a dollar short and an hour late.
China's strong ally, Russia. We head to Moscow. Last week, there was a report that there was an Iranian delegation in Moscow to discuss military cooperation, missiles, drones, and ground forces. Is the delegation still in Moscow, Malcolm?
As far as we know, they are still there. This was an important delegation, high-level people. They arrived in Moscow to deal with the ground forces as a primary interest, as well as the other issues you addressed. And, you know, we have the United States and others have accused them of selling the drones for use against Ukraine, supposedly building a factory for Ukraine. But this delegation is there to talk about strategic cooperation and expanding the level of cooperation between Iran and Russia. It should underscore why the concern about the $6 billion that's being released to them, that this is not money that will benefit the people. This is not money that will help anyone in Iran. This is money that will be used to expand their terrorist agencies and their capacity to expand their military prowess. And they are looking more and more to China and Russia joining together with them in joint maneuvers and also now in planning for the future.
And we move from Moscow to Saudi Arabia by train. I was unaware the route goes south from Moscow to Baku. Vision of the future is that you can not only go north to south from northern Europe all the way to the Indian Ocean, but you can go east to west from China to the European markets, passing through Baku. But it must also pass through Iran. And I was unaware till Malcolm brought it to my attention that the gap has been closed. And the train has now left Moscow and it's headed for Iran. Trading what, Malcolm? Is this oil? Is this parts? What are they trading?
So the answer is it's going to be many things. As you know, Iran has been the transit point for oil, illegal oil, oil under sanction from Russia to be resold by Iran. And they get it at bargain prices and sell it to China, sell it to others. But this is going beyond that. This train that will come to Iran is going to head to Saudi Arabia then. So it's part of an effort for trade between Russia and Saudi Arabia. It will then open up new opportunities for Russia to trade in the Gulf and to become more of a presence there. And, you know, we see the Iranians playing this pivotal role. It's exactly what they want, to be part of the system, not only in the Gulf, with their relationships supposedly improving with Saudi Arabia, UAE, and the others. They are deciding to make common cause, and why the BRICS story we mentioned before also has relevance to this. And we see the Iranians moving to bring Russia and China together for maritime cooperation, and saying that they have to pursue the international waterways, a greater presence there. So all this time, while Iran's economy is virtually collapsing, we know that inflation is actually at 40% and believed to be much higher. The currency lost half of its value over the last 2 years. And we know that the economy overall, the foreign sanctions are generally working. But we see that the contrary impact comes from the, you know, release of all of the funds and the potential that more funds will be released, and that they are working assiduously with China and Russia to build a counterforce in the Gulf. It's something I'm sure that the Gulf countries are worried about, but their decision seems to be, if you can't beat them, join them, and working together with to negate Iran's influence. But they one of the things is Saudi Arabia, for instance, is courting Iran to get the World Cup to be in Saudi Arabia. So they are looking to relationships with Iran that I think should be very disturbing to all of us.
The Iranian foreign minister is in Saudi Arabia to discuss what, Matt? FIFA? They're talking cup?
Well, he was there, and he was talking about unity and dialogue during his visit, which was the first since they announced the rapprochement. And he took the opportunity to repeat the Iranian position on the Palestinians, and really was speaking in this regard to try to prevent the potential normalizing of ties with Israel, and asserted we continue to support Palestine and about the Zionist regime, and you know, that its efforts to create divisions among the world, and used very harsh language, which was not responded to. But they were talking about economic and security cooperation, but they did not announce any new agreements, which I think is a critical factor. So we don't know to what degree Saudi Arabia is playing along with the game just for its own purposes, or is there really going to be more substance added to it? The fact that he came 2 months after Prince Faisal became the first Saudi foreign minister to go to Iran in 15 or 18 years, and the opening of the embassies, they're all seen as the CBMs, as confidence-building measures. Now we have to see what kind of meat really goes on those bones.
We need some good news, Malcolm. Okay. The Israeli Defense Ministry has something for sale that the U.S. Marine Corps is very interested in. What's that?
Well, it's something that U.S. played an important role in, and that is that they are buying three of the Israeli Iron Dome batteries and 1,840 interceptor missiles. They say that they will use this to defend against cruise missiles to protect U.S. troops, and also against the drones and rockets and artillery rounds. So this is further confidence being expressed in the Iron Dome system by the U.S. And the shipments, I think, are going to be tried to be expedited as quickly as possible.
And to Papua New Guinea, Port Moresby, a decision has been made. Papua New Guinea's in play, Malcolm. China's pitching. The U.S. was recently there. The Secretary of State stopped by. The French president passed through the region. So it's very far away, but it's very much in everybody's mind because of the contest between the People's Republic of China and the West over the islands and the chains of islands. Papua New Guinea has made a good decision. What is it, Malcolm?
The decision is that they're going to open their embassy in Jerusalem in a couple months. They have been talking about it for several months, but they made the official announcement. I think it also comes at a time when we see several South American countries, Uruguay, others saying that they will have an embassy or assure the continuation of their embassies in Jerusalem. The Guatemalan president, who was just elected, by the way, speaks Hebrew. He attended the Hebrew University as a student and later served there, as did his father. So we're seeing some positive signs in this very bleak period that and especially seeing any signs of light in South America is very critical as we see the expansion of Iran and China and the diminution of American influence there. Also, by the way, Israel is going to have the laser weapons soon, and the United States is very interested in that.
Malcolm Hoheline, Conference of Presidents, Major American Jewish Organizations. The Dusty One, Indiana Hoheline, is due into the studio when we come back. I'm John Batchelor.